Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Whether you work for government or industry, we're here to help you understand more about how the other side thinks. This episode is brought to you by IB Supply. IBSupply.com is your one-stop source for timely delivery of best-value products. As a preferred source of supply and an award-winning Ability One provider, IBSupply.com offers access to thousands of products with compliance filters for hassle-free procurement. With free shipping and next-day delivery options, IBSupply.com's quality service is unmatched. Shop IBSupply.com today. Our topic for this episode is the 8A program, and I've invited our friend Shelley Hall to join me to share her experiences. Let's get started. Okay, Shelley, let's talk about the 8A program. What is the 8A program?
Well, it's a business development program that the Small Business Administration put together that assists businesses, small disadvantaged businesses, that are owned or controlled by at least 51% by socially and economically disadvantaged individuals. And we're going to talk more about that socially and economically disadvantaged.
Definitely have to describe that.
Yeah. And what it's really intended for is to help those folks that are entrepreneurs gain access, you know, to the economy, to the American economy. And participation in the program is divided into two phases over 9 years. And this is kind of important because I have a story that I'll tell you a little bit further down the line about that. But the first 4 years is the developmental stage, and the last 5 years is what they call the transition stage. And again, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah. You have to explain that to me, what the difference is.
Yeah, it's interesting.
In order to qualify to become part of the 8A program, like you said, a business has to be majority owned, which means 51% or more, by an individual or individuals who are American citizens by birth or naturalization, and it must be controlled and managed by those socially and economically disadvantaged individuals. Those people that are controlling and managing the firm on a full-time basis have to meet the requirements for disadvantages by proving both they're socially disadvantaged and economically disadvantaged. And I want to talk about that next. Don't let me forget. You have to be a small business, like you mentioned. You have to demonstrate the potential for success. The principals in the company must show good character. Wonder why they added that to the requirements. And then there are some separate eligibility requirements for businesses that are owned by American Indians, Native Alaskans, Native Hawaiians, etc. One last trick in the requirements is you can only participate once in the program as either an individual or a business. You can't start a string of successive 8A programs as you age out of the period, the 9-year program like you were talking about. And you can't have multiple businesses going at once if you're an individual. You only get to play once. If that doesn't help you through, I guess tough luck.
Yeah, I guess so. And a couple of things that I wanted to point out in this is they've recently stressed that controlled and managed by those individuals, by the socially or economically disadvantaged individuals, because, you know, in the past, it was kind of like owned, and the word owned was construed as, you know, somebody that a CEO that sat on a, you know, in an office out in Dallas, Texas, and never really had anything to do with the company. And now, so they really have to have that control and that management piece in there. And it's something that the SBA is really starting to look at to make sure that piece is being fulfilled. So it's not as easy now to get in the 8A program as it used to be.
Right. And why do they make these rules? Why do they add owned or controlled and managed? Because some people probably tried to game the system a little bit. And the program's meant to help people that need a helping hand. And if people that don't need a helping hand are taking advantage of it, it kind of squanders the whole opportunity to do good for all. So before we go any farther, let's get back to this. What is disadvantaged? We mentioned you have to be both socially disadvantaged and economically disadvantaged. First, you have to prove social disadvantage. And I'll read a little bit here. This is from the SBA. under federal law, socially disadvantaged individuals are those who have been subjected to racial or ethnic prejudice or cultural bias within American society because of their identification as members of groups without regard to their individual qualities. So for the purposes of the 8A Business Development Program, the following individuals are presumed to be socially disadvantaged, and they're called presumed groups. You are presumed to be disadvantaged. And these are Black, Hispanic, Native Americans, Asian Pacific Americans, subcontinent Asian Americans. All are presumed to be socially disadvantaged. If you're one of those presumed groups, then you have to prove that you're economically disadvantaged. And to do that, you have to provide data to the SBA in order to be certified as an 8A. You have to submit supporting documentation that proves your assets, your income, your net worth, and you have to be below thresholds. And these thresholds are, to me, surprisingly high. Your assets cannot exceed $4 million. Your personal income cannot exceed $250,000 averaged over 3 years. And your adjusted net worth must be less than $250,000. So actually, you don't have to be destitute in order to qualify for the program. But you can see how someone with those attributes below those thresholds might have trouble competing against larger, better financed businesses.
Absolutely. And again, you know, people can look at this and say, well, why were those particular groups put in there and why are they presumed groups? And you know, all that lies in the law and how, you know, the Code of Federal Regulations and the Small Business Administration, how they all decided to, you know, to look at certain groups of individuals.
Yeah, historically, who needs help?
Right.
And one last point before we move on from this, what is disadvantage? Unlike other small business representations where you just tell the government, yes, I'm a woman-owned small business or a veteran-owned small business, and they believe you until it's proven otherwise, this program, you actually have to be certified by the SBA, and you have to prove this social and economic disadvantages. The reason, well, we'll get into the reasons why you have to be certified. The benefits of this program are so high that I think it's just too tempting to allow people to self-certify here. So what are the goals of the 8A Business Development Program? Why did the SBA do this?
Well, really the overall goal is to take those firms and after that 9 years, graduate them into becoming a very competitive business in the federal market. So, you know, it's kind of like putting a child through college.
Yeah.
You know, God willing, when they graduate, that they're individuals who can then, you know, go out and live on their own.
Yep.
So, but it's important that they do want them to maintain a balance between their commercial and government business. They don't want them to be only doing one or the other. And there is a limit on the total dollar value of sole source contracts that can be received while in the program. It's $100 million, again, pretty big number, or 5 times the value of its primary NAICS code. And if you listen to our previous podcast on NAICS codes, then you know that can do a lot of different things. And there are district offices and regional offices in the Small Business Administration that now do annual reviews, business planning, and evaluations. And they also provide all kinds of training, counseling, marketing assistance, executive development, all of those. And they're also eligible for assistance with the SBA guaranteed loans and bonding assistance. So, I mean, it's an awesome program. Once you document everything and you get all that information in there, once you're in the program, there's a lot of help there for you to succeed, to become a competitive business in the marketplace.
Okay, before we go any farther, we usually talk about acquisition time zones. Where does being an 8A contractor, where does the 8A program fit into the acquisition world? It's across the board, but where it first appears, I think, is the government's developed a requirement, and you go out and you do your market research, and you try to find out, are there any small businesses, or even more specifically, 8A businesses that can do the work? If so, you can pretty much skip the rest of it. You don't have to compete. And that's something you touched upon before. You mentioned sole source contracts. Why is this program so important? It's important because it allows a contracting officer to award a sole source contract to an 8A contractor. No competition required. If you find an 8A that can do it, you can award them a sole source contract. And the result of that is?
Well, it encourages those small disadvantaged businesses to sell their items and services to the government. Because, you know, let's face it, there's a lot that has to be done to get into the government, you know, the federal government contracting world. There's a lot of stuff. And it assists them in being competitive against other businesses once they graduate. And in theory, according to the Small Business Administration, it encourages that free enterprise in the marketplace. You know, the more, you know, whatever the market will bear. So the more competitors you have, the better the pricing is going to be and so forth. And
yeah. So we're helping bring new entrants into the government market that otherwise would not be able to compete. And the way it does that is they don't have to compete. If they can provide it and provide it for a fair and reasonable price, you can give them, if you're a CO, you can give them a sole source contract to provide it. And you can recognize that there's probably a price premium above what you would pay for the exact same thing if it were openly competed. But again, this is one of the things about the government. You're not always trying to get the lowest price. There are some programs like this in place that are designed for a bigger purpose than always paying the lowest price. And that leads me to my next thought. Yes, the program encourages free enterprise in the marketplace. It brings new entrants into the market. But in some sense, it subverts these basic capitalistic principles that we're supposed to be based on, that our economy is supposed to be based on. If you're a free marketer, then this program probably horrifies you because you're adding inefficiency to the process. Without the government forcing this program into existence, these businesses would never be able to compete and would never grow. But a pure capitalist would say they don't belong in the system if they can't compete. Anyway, just wanted to get that off my chest before we went any farther.
I understand. And, you know, and this probably is a good time for me to insert one of my stories in here, because people are listening and they're going, oh my God, we're just giving these people business. So I don't want them to think that. And I personally, you know, as a CEO with 20 plus years in the federal government, have had amazingly positive experiences with 8A contractors. I'm sure there's other CEOs who could say they had horrible experiences, but let me give you an example. We had, and especially for, you know, kind of 8A contractors started out doing things that were non-complex tasks. And, you know, then as the program has grown over the years that I was in the government, you know, I really don't think you could find anything that an 8A can't do. But professional technical services is, you know, was one of the things. And early in my career at one organization, we were looking for a contractor, and I was approached by an 8A contractor, and we developed a great relationship, and still, once I retired, I maintain a friendship. But they were, you know, a good solid company. They were also a woman-owned business, and they were in the 8A program. And they just were, you know, the first contract I let with them, the customer was so happy. And so what happened within that organization was every time a requirement for professional technical services came up, they said, we want that company. And it made it so easy. I was like, boom. Okay.
Sole source.
So here, you know, we go along that first 4 years, and we're just awarding sole source, sole source, sole source, sole source. And all of a sudden we get to, they've hit that second 5 years, that developmental program, and the process, and we don't need to explain that, but, you know, there has to be approvals to sole source to an 8A, and you send it through the Regional Small Business Administration. And so, you know, here we go, you know, we're like, yep, we want this company, and we're so excited, and we get a denial back from the Regional Small Business Administration. And they said, no, you cannot sole source this to this contractor. And we're like, huh? You know, I mean, we were like, what, wait, whoa. And during that last 5 years, there's very stringent requirements that they have to meet as far as they have to compete on a certain number, compete and win a certain number of non-sole source contracts.
So that's farther preparation. First, you get it handed to you, then you have to compete.
They have to bid on so many open market acquisitions. They have to do this, and they were not meeting that. And again, that was not shared with me what that percentage was, but they said at this point, they're not meeting that and you can't sole source to them. So I was devastated, of course.
Yeah.
But what was interesting is they graduated from the program, and recently their son sent me a big article in the paper about how well they're doing now competing with the, you know, with everybody else. So
that's
so
great.
But so we're not just giving them away. There's rules that they have to follow during that last 5 years.
That's great. You got to work for it. So you just encapsulated why the government should care about this program, because you get access to these high-performing, technically capable 8A contractors. During the first 4 years of the program, you can give them contracts on a sole source basis. And this is authorized. This is the right way to go. It's so fast and simple compared to doing a competition. And you just describe, you have to get approval, you get the approval, you negotiate, you award, they go off and hopefully do great things, so much so that the customer's coming to you next time and saying, please, please go back to this company. And another lovely thing, an 8A directed sole source contract cannot be protested. More savings and efficiency. So you really get small businesses that are out there eager to prove themselves, grow, build up the experience and the past performance so that they can compete during the second phase of the program and then compete once they graduate. There's lots of success stories out there of programs, of companies that started out as 8As and have grown into very, very competent, capable companies. But we've touched on this before. It is possible to take advantage of the 8A preference for personal gain. And it's been done. If you do a little Google work on the 8A program, you can quickly find many companies where people have been prosecuted for taking advantage of the system. And I think that many people's only familiarity with the system is when these headlines hit that some company committed fraud and these people are all going to jail. That you might not hear the good news stories as much as you hear the bad news stories, because that's the way our news cycle likes it, right?
Yeah, they never report on all the planes that land safely.
Exactly. Only the plane crashes. I think the most common way that fraud comes into the 8A's program is when people misrepresent their social or economic status. So the SBA has to certify you, but people try to get around it. Sometimes they misrepresent who's actually in ownership or control, who's actually managing the company. There's lots of stories around someone taking an employee's wife and setting it up as a woman-owned disadvantaged business, and that employee's wife is not actually running the company, but they're listed as an owner on the paperwork so that they can qualify for these sole source awards. There's also lots of horror stories about large businesses who have, or mid-sized businesses who have created shell 8A companies through some kind of scheme where the person is socially or economically disadvantaged, and the work that's sole source to that 8A company goes right through to the large business as a pass-through. The government does catch on to those things. There are fines and lots of jail time as a result of that. If you're really interested, I'm sure Google can help you out.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is, you know, not only has the SBA tightened up on more reviews of the 8A program, you know, the one part of that that was never touchable was the Alaska Native American
right.
companies. They were just, you know, they said, no, don't argue. There's an Alaska Native American, and that's who you're going to award to. That's all there is to it. So just shut up and don't argue. Well, just recently, I was reading that the SBA finally has started putting more stringent requirements on that particular, they call them ANC, Alaskan Native Corporations, because you know, they found some of the same misrepresentations. So now that one thing that was completely untouchable has now kind of started being something that they're also looking at. So
yeah, I've heard stories where there's like 25 admin employees that are actually in Alaska, but none of them are actually Alaska natives, but the owner of the company is, and then there's 2,500 people working on the programs throughout the country. And somehow they still qualify as Alaska Native owned. And it's, I'm not sure that it's working the way it was supposed to work. Let's focus for a second on why industry should care. First, if you're a large business, this program can actually benefit you. If a competition has been set aside for 8As only, 8A participants only, the 8A must perform 51% of the work, but they can have a subcontractor who is a large business. Same with a directed sole source. if Shelley has awarded this 8A company a sole source contract, that 8A company has to perform 51% of the work for this to be a valid 8A sole source. But a large business can be a subcontractor there. So if you're a large business, you can partner with small businesses to enter new markets or to gain some work share in places where you wouldn't get to because you're not a small business. And I think we've already talked a lot about how this is such a great force multiplier for small businesses. You have the ability to win work, to compete for work, or to get work sole sourced to you that you otherwise wouldn't have access to if you're a small disadvantaged business. Okay, let's wrap this up before we get too deep.
We can do that. So this 8A business development program, and that is the full title of it, it assists small disadvantaged businesses, and it's a 9-year program in 2 phases. For the government COs, it can be really a quick, easy acquisition methodology that cannot be protested. And
you have to love that.
Yeah, you got to love that. And I'm imagining on August the 30th, when they've got 30 days to be awarding new contracts for fiscal year end money that have come in for service contracts, they're looking for those 8A contractors.
Absolutely.
They can award to. So GSA and 8A becomes very popular this time.
Yeah, and on the industry side, if you are a small business, this is a time to be reaching out to these government customers and letting them know that they can award a sole source contract to you if you're a member of the 8A program, if you're certified. If you're a large business, it's a great chance to partner with 8A companies in order to get up to 49% of that business. So overall, I'd have to say this is a really good program that has helped a lot of businesses get ahead in the federal contracting world.
I would 100% agree. And like I said, I would like to look up success stories and failure stories. And I imagine there's probably been much more successes than there have been failures. We just don't hear about them.
I absolutely agree. All right, Shelley, great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Paul. Thanks.
That's it for another episode of the Contracting Officer Podcast. Don't forget to sign up for your free webinar at skywaywebinar.com. And as always, if you have questions, comments, or complaints, send me an email at paul@contractingofficerpodcast.com. Thanks for joining us.